one of the most powerful and beautiful chapters in the autobiography of a yogi the one that's entitled Materializing a Palace in the Himalaya. It's an extraordinary story, and I'm hoping that I can get through it without being too teary. I know where I'm going, of course, and none of you do. It's reminding me, just as I went to stand up thinking maybe I couldn't talk about it, I'm going to say something very mundane to get myself centered here. Years ago, when the play Miss Saigon first came out, it didn't open in the United States, it opened in England, and it's an extraordinary story. If you haven't seen it, it's a very powerful, very heartfelt. There's a lot of truth and a lot of about love, and it was written by the same people who wrote Les Mis. And my husband, who was much more into the detail of music than I was, bought it for us, and we listened to it over and over and over before it came here. And we had tickets to go and see it right when it opened on Broadway. So this is what I'm feeling now about this story I want to tell you. We finally go to see the play, and we're sitting there in the theater on Broadway, and the orchestra hits the first chord, and I burst out sobbing, and everybody around me is just looking at me. Of course, I knew the whole story. Most of them didn't. Oh, I have that feeling now. In this chapter, Lahiri Mahashaya, who's an accountant with the government in a city in India, gets a message. And Lahiri, for those of you who are new, is the man up here on my right, and he, of course, is one of the avatars on this path. But he gets word that he is supposed to be transferred to a town called Raniket, which is at the base of the Himalayas. It's 500 miles from where he's living. He makes the trip literally by horse and buggy. This was in, I think, the 1860s. He was 32 or 33 years old. And he gets there and he gets himself settled. And he then starts hiking up into the Himalaya, up into the jungle in the mountains. And he's greeted by a man who he does not recognize, but he says in the telling of it later, he says, other than for his copper-colored hair, I was struck by how much like me he looked, he said. And he was just drawn to this man, but he had no idea who he was. And this man asks him to follow him, and they're walking together, and he leads him into a cave. And he says to Lahiri, does this cave look familiar to you? And Lahiri says, no. And they sit and they talk, and the man asks him, and he's speaking to him in English, which is really surprising, Lahiri. He said, you don't recognize this blanket or this cup? And Lahiri says, no. And then at some point, but he's feeling very safe, at some point he says to the man, I really should go because I have to get back before dark, and I have work to do down at my office. And the man looks at him and says, the office was made for the man, not the man for the office. And he's struck by the take on Christ's words. Who is this man who's quoting things to him like this? And suddenly, the man who turns out to be Babaji just taps him on his third eye, and Lahiri is filled with memories of so many lives that he has spent with Babaji in the past. He's just flooded. His heart is open. And Babaji says to him, now you remember. And he said, I have been watching you over lifetimes. He said, I've kept your asana blanket where you've meditated. I've kept it here. I've swept it every day so that it would be clean. You see this bowl that you drank from? You see how I've shined it and polished it? And he's just speaking to him with such love. And he said to Lahiri, you have spent many lifetimes in silence in these caves. But due to a bit of karma, this life you had to go back out and live amongst the people. And he said, but I've had my eye on you. He said, it's by no accident that it's taken 3 decades for you to come here now. He said, when you were living the human life in the womb, living out that period of time, I had my eye on you. He said, when your little form was sitting in a lotus pose and you covered yourself with sand on the beach, I was watching over you very closely. He said, I have not taken my eye off of you, waiting for the right moment for you to be here. And Lahiri is just overtaken. And he said, who could imagine such deathless love? And he grabs his guru by the feet. And after spending some time explaining certain things to him, Babaji gives Lahiri an experience of samadhi, of pure bliss, nirvikalpa samadhi. He's in a state of realizing oneness with everything. And it lasts for 7 days. And he says, on the 8th day, he opened his eyes. And he threw himself at the feet of his guru. And he said, please don't make me leave. Please keep me here with you. And Babaji says to him, this is not your life this time. This is all by design, everything that's happened. I've met you in your 3rd decade of life when you have a modest family, when you have business that you need to take care of. He said, you have a life in the world. He said, this life for you is to be lived in view of the multitude. That's what he said. And he tells him then that he's doing that because he came to show everyone what it would look like to be a yogi and a householder. In that moment, you have to go back. The cries of all of these people who are drawn by so much work, who have family problems, who have all of these worldly issues, Babaji says, to deal with. He said, you are now going to go back and you are going to be the one who can show them that we can be in the world but not of it. You have been born in this life, he says, to take this great practice of Kriya Yoga back to the world. But then Babaji says to Lahiri, but you can only give Kriya to those people who commit themselves to renouncing everything in the name of God. And Lahiri says to Babaji, in the most beautiful way, he says, oh, angelic guru, he said, I am going to beg you to relax the rules, the regulations that you have on who can get Kriya. There are so many people who need this, so many people who will find no other way to step onto the spiritual path unless I give them these sacred techniques. And Babaji says to Lahiri, be it so. He says, the divine has found its voice through you. And he says to him, you can give this technique, this meditation technique, to anybody who shows sincerity for a desire to be on the spiritual path. It will be your job to show them that attaining oneness with God, attaining that divine state, knowing bliss, is about inner renunciation and not about outer renunciation. In essence, it's about the inner kingdom, not what we're doing outside. And as many of you know, the rest of the story, he became the guru to Sri Yukteswar, who's on my left, who became the guru to Paramahansa Yogananda, who founded Self-Realization Fellowship. Swami Kriyananda became a direct disciple, and here we are. As I've said many times, no accident at all that we were born in this life to know these teachings through Master, through Swamiji. And knowing these teachings means being told that we can all be handed these beautiful techniques if we just feel sincerely that we want to know God. Now that's not a small just, of course. There's a story that Paramahansa Yogananda used to tell often about the musk deer in India, which is a particular type of deer that lives very high in the Himalaya. And around its navel area, it has a pouch. And in that pouch, it secretes a liquid that is the fragrance that we all know of as musk. I actually looked this up last night to make sure that this was true and not a fable, but it's true. I thought to myself, could Master have been telling this sort of as an analogy or an allegory? But he was not. At a certain age, the fragrance of the musk starts becoming real, and the deer starts looking for where the fragrance is coming from. And it looks everywhere, just like we do, in case anybody's missing the meaning of this story. It looks all through the forest, it looks in the creeks, literally starts driving itself crazy, looking for the source of this exquisite fragrance. The only place he never looks is within his own self. And there are stories that these deer get so wound up and frenetic that they wind up jumping off of these very high cliffs, literally committing suicide, looking for what they have all the time. And then there are people below who know the deer are going to do this. And they find the deer, and they get the pouches, and we get the musk scent. But the story and the meaning of it is that they never look inside. Last week, all of these things are hopefully going to come together at some point. So please stay with me. This is very profound, all of what had to happen to get to this reading today. Three different people came to me last week, really feeling deeply, with great sincerity and a great depth of feeling, that in one way or the other, they were maybe not good enough to be on this path, maybe not doing enough, practicing enough, feeling enough devotion in their heart, living their lives purely in terms of God, enough to be given Kriya, to study these teachings. Each one had their own story, each story deeply touching, and each story coming to me from people I know to be great disciples, great and sincere yogis, but doubting, and doubting based on, understandably, I don't meditate enough hours, I forget about God for days at a time. Each story, not to be taken lightly. And each time, my heart was so touched, I felt such pain. I wanted to say to them, when you go home tonight, look in the mirror and ask yourself, if Shanti were looking in the mirror, what would she see? Who would she see? Never mind if God was looking at me. You know, I had a friend who had a beautiful saying on her refrigerator for years and years and years, may you always feel as beautiful as you were in the eyes of God when he first thought of you. It is so beautiful. St. Augustine had a saying, something like, God loves each of us so much as if we were the only one of us. And of course, we are. But we get blinded. We think that we have to be doing something extraordinary, that we have to be meditating at least 2 hours a day, or that we have to be living in spiritual community, or whatever the goals are that we set for ourselves. The bar is often so high that we set ourselves up for failure. Now, over this past month, I've been teaching a class along with Connie, and Lahari was with me this last week, called How to Be Truly Well. It really turned out to be a remarkable class for many reasons, including all of the people who came, of course. But the last class, we were talking about very deep things, the essence of these teachings, the essence of them, mainly energy, and the fact that we're all energy, and how energy can be transformed and heal us. And we did that in the first three classes. And the last class we devoted to technique. We were going to talk to people about all of the techniques that we have been given on this path that can transform energy. And Lahari spoke first, and she taught beautifully about prayer and then about meditation. And when it was my turn to speak, having been really influenced and touched by these people who were feeling that they were not doing enough, I said to everybody, we need to understand these techniques have been given to us, these very simple techniques. I said, they fool us. They're so easy that they fool us. You could easily sit through this next hour of my talking, I said to the class, and say, oh, they're just talking to us about prayer or about chanting or about affirmations again. How many times have we heard them? But I said to them, please don't do that. These simple techniques are exactly what it is. Whatever is in your imagination, whatever you think, how hard it needs to be, how impossible it is, how you couldn't possibly make it, how everybody else could, they're all lies we tell ourselves. And every time that we do any little bit of this, every prayer that we say, every time we say an affirmation, and I said those affirmations, within me lies the energy to accomplish all that I will to do. Behind my every act is God's infinite power. I have a patient who's been doing one affirmation for 14 months now. That's what he does. He says the affirmation, or you say a prayer, or chanting, which Master said is half the battle. He didn't just say that as a, for instance, like maybe it gets you close. He said it's half the battle. Why did he say that? Because we chant, we pull that energy in, we raise it up, and then we have it right there. We move it from form to formless so that it gets more and more into a position where it can be offered, meaning we can be offered to the divine. But we don't just go from an 8-hour, 10-hour, 12-hour day at work to formless. How many of us do that? We come home and we maybe say one prayer. Maybe we just pray over our food. Maybe we sit and meditate for 5 minutes. Maybe that's what we can do. But everything we do is transformative. Everything. You know those Master taught these superconscious living exercises? They look so silly to people when they first hear them. One of them is, they're all affirmations. I am awake and ready. What a beautiful affirmation. But Master doesn't just say it like that. Master says, I am awake and ready. I am awake and ready. What do you feel like after you do that or after you hear it? It's remarkable. What if that was all you could do? Lahiri says to Babaji, please, let me give these techniques. Now, they were talking about Kriya, but for those of us who are not Kriyabans, it works the same. Let me give them to everybody, because everybody needs a roadmap. None of us can go anywhere without a map. And if we're not too, whatever it is, that quality that is usually very often found on the X chromosome, if you'll forgive me, much more often in men than in women, not being willing to ask for directions. But if we let ourselves ask for directions, we might even know we have been handed them. This is the science of yoga that Krishna is talking about in the reading today. It's not so impossible that we can't understand it. It's not that difficult. It's something. Master says being on the spiritual path is like running a race and doing stunts the whole time. And Swamiji counsels us over and over, when you're on a spiritual path, better to be a long distance runner than a sprinter. You know, now they're cautioning us. This is how Joseph Goldstein coined that phrase. Many things on the spiritual path are simple. They're all simple. They're not necessarily easy. But so what? What about life is easy? Who said life is supposed to be easy? What would it even look like if it was like that? We're here and we are going to be challenged, and thank God we are, and we have been given these little techniques. This was Wednesday night. What happens on Friday? On Friday morning, many of you get a letter from Asha. It's Ask Asha. She now has a book, but this was the next letter. For those of you who got it, go home and read it. For those of you who didn't, go to the website and find it. Friday morning, somebody asks Asha, how can I know God all the time? Asha says, we all make it so hard. We all think it's got to be so difficult, so intellectually challenging, so much more than what it is. 5 minutes after the email came, Lahari sends me an email. She said, don't you just love synchronicity? And you know, because literally, if you listen to that talk on Wednesday night, and you read Asha's letter, word for word, even some of the same affirmations, of all the affirmations, I said, Asha chooses, I go forth in perfect faith in the power of the omnipresent good to bring me what I need when I need it. I said that over and over Wednesday. Asha said it Friday morning. How can that be? Because what Master said is absolutely true. If you listen and you read, you'll see. No exaggeration. Thoughts are universally, not individually rooted. We all know this. Suddenly, it came to us. You know, one of the things that Babaji said to Lahiri when he was talking to him, and he was explaining to Lahiri that he was the one who called him to have this transfer to begin with, that would get him into the mountains so he could meet him, so that we could all have Kriya Yoga. I mean, just try and wrap your mind around that, but that's what happened. But he said, when we have access to this universal wisdom, he said, every mind, every human mind, can become a perfect tool. Meaning, we're just here. We're just receiving stuff. We have no idea how much God is working with us. If we are here, if we are in this church, it's the truth. We just may not know it. Who cares if we know it? Feel what's in your heart. There's a woman who left me a message a few days ago from New York, and the message was just short. This is so-and-so, call me. So yesterday was the first opportunity I had to call her. So I called her, and I said, hi, this is Shanti Rubinstone. And she said, oh, hi. And I said, well, just was wondering why you called me. She said, are you responding to my ad? And I said, no, you called me. You know, we went back and forth of sort of like a real serious version of who's on first. We were acting it out in our lives right there. And yesterday was a rather full day for me. So she started talking to me. She said to me, I'm 58 years old. I'm about to be 59. She said, I'm here. I don't know what my life is about. I don't know what I'm doing. She said, I don't know why I called you, she said. And I don't know why you called me. I said, well, I called you because you called me. But as I listened to her, I really got, she said, I need my life to have meaning. Isn't this amazing? I don't know this woman. She can't even remember why she called me. But here we are, connected. And it came to me this morning when I was meditating. I've got to call that woman back. I've got to spend more time with her. Nothing is an accident. And it's not really all that complicated. We have been handed these tools. They look deceptively simple. And they are simple. But you know, as Asha said in her letter, and I was either there when Swami said it or I heard it on a talk. Here are these, we've been listening to Swami for years and years and years and years. We're on this path. We're on this path. Swami says to everybody one day, I challenge you all to think about God for 5 consecutive minutes in a day. Ah, not easy. I've admitted up here many times, there are times where I go to pray, Heavenly Father, Divine Mother, list our gurus. Before I get to Lahiri, I'm writing a dinner menu. It's like, the only way I've tried to train myself out of that is by saying, you have to start over, Shanti. You don't get to just pick up at Lahiri or Sri Yukteswar. No, these absent-minded prayers don't mean anything. Take one prayer. Do it for a couple of minutes. Take one affirmation. Do anything. God watches the heart. We are told these techniques, these scientific techniques plus devotion are how we get to God. They're how we get everything we say we want. Just start opening your heart. That's all you have to do. Don't make it more complicated than it is. God loves us so much. God is us. There's nowhere for us to go. There's no such thing as time, space. It's right here. Just be here now for a simple moment. I want to end by just, as I did in the class, for any of you who go to listen, Swami Kriyananda's songs, every day of my life, I am more moved by them. Songs that I have sung 1,000 times. Every word in every song has such extraordinary meaning. If I forget this line, as somebody who knows it, help me. But there's a beautiful line in one of Swamiji's songs. It's the ending, and he sings it twice. And I've always loved this song, but this ending has always gotten me. He says, every effort we spend gives more life in the end, till our gladness enjoys ever new. I'm going to repeat that for you, but it rings a little, doesn't it, of Satchitananda, ever existing, ever conscious, ever new bliss. And he's saying, every effort we spend, every effort, every little moment, every time we lift up our eyes, everything. Remember, Jesus said, seek ye first the kingdom of God, and all else will be added. He didn't exactly tell us when it would be added, but he promises it will be added. Seek ye first, Swamiji says, every effort we spend gives more life in the end, till in gladness our joys ever new. God bless you.